Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Just about any day in Pawhuska, Oklahoma, you'll see tourists from states all over the Midwest walking around downtown. They've come to visit the growing network of businesses surrounding Reed Drummond's Pioneer Woman Enterprise. But there's far more to see in Pawhuska. A far different set of travelers come to visit to learn more about the history related in David Grand's book, Killers of the Flower Moon, about the Osage Headright murders in the 1920s. Both sets of tourists could learn more, though, about Pawhuska's people and history with a visit to the Osage Nation Museum. And today we learn about America's oldest tribal museum, which has been transforming itself over the past several years. Curator and director Hallie Winter is in her fourth year at the museum. She joins us to talk about the renewed focus of the Osage Museum. She was recently honored with the 2018 Nancy Hanks Award for Professional Excellence from the American Alliance of Museums. It's given for outstanding work by a museum professional with less than 10 years in the field. She joins us today to talk about the Osage Nation Museum. Hallie Winter, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And congratulations on the Nancy Hanks Memorial Award from the American Alliance of Museums. It's a great honor for a small museum like the Osage Nation Museum.
Thank you. It was very humbling experience, and I'm very proud of the fact that I can bring that recognition to the Osage Nation.
Let's talk a little bit about your museum and about many tribal museums here in Oklahoma. What role do they play in the tribal community and perhaps to the public at large? What do you see the mission of the Osage Nation Museum?
So a little background. The Osage Nation Museum opened in 1938, and it is America's first tribal museum.
Very first,
We are currently in our original building, which at one time was the chapel for the Osage Indian Government Boarding School, which was then on the Osage Agency in Pawhuska, Oklahoma. I think the role of tribal museums is multifaceted. 87% of American history books in the country refer to Native peoples as a people pre-1900. And so there is this invisibility of Native peoples today in our contemporary life.
So history books quit mentioning them as soon as white people come into the picture. I mean, really, this is what you're saying.
Exactly. So I think tribal museums have a role to break through that invisibility, to really educate the public on who they are today, on their contribution to society, and to educate on their culture, their values, their art, their traditions, and really try to break through those barriers and educate that we are still a thriving people.
I would think a lot of tribal museums would focus on the pre-1900 history, the history of who we were, the story of pre-European incursion.
Yeah, and so we do highlight pre-contact. The Osage originated in the Ohio River Valley. By the time contact around 1673 happened with French explorers, we were living in Missouri. And so we really consider Missouri to be our homeland, our ancestral homeland. Through the removal process, we ceded over 100 million acres and were eventually removed into what is now Osage County. And so that is a large part of our history, but it's not all of us. And so we really try to highlight things that we're doing today. We are an incubator for contemporary Osage artists. We highlight their work. And so while we do touch on the values and the history of the ancestral time period, we really try to show how those values translate in today's society.
Now, the Osage has a particularly rich history because of its oil wealth, because of the tremendous progress it made in Osage County, taking this land that was the last given, practically, in many ways. It was considered the ultimately worthless land that you found riches under. And so there's that story, and yet there's the story of what happened after the oil riches, as well as the sort of notorious history of the Reign of Terror and the like. Do you try to tell that story as well?
We do touch on the Reign of Terror briefly, but it's not something that we highlight. It's a devastating, heart-wrenching part of our history that affects many people that are still living today. And so that's not our main focus. Our main focus is to highlight our perseverance, the ways that we're continuing to thrive, what we're doing for our children as far as immersion schools and teaching them our Osage language and continuing our traditional art forms. And so while the Reign of Terror is an important part of our history and it is something that I believe every American should know, it's not something that we genuinely focus on because there's more to us than that.
Sure, of course, yeah. Well, one of the things, I'd be interesting how you focus something like the Osage Nation Museum. Is it geared towards the nation itself or is it geared towards the public at large?
I think that's both. We are open to the public. All of our events are free and open to the public as well. And so what we try to do is educate the public on Osage history, art, and culture, but also provide outlets for our local community. As we all know, Oklahoma school system isn't very well funded, and so we try to supplement that by doing different types of art workshops for our children, bring in writing workshops. We're doing a Preserve Your Family Photos workshop. So we try to use the museum as an outlet to get this arts education out into our community and also as a place of reference for people that may be Osage but didn't grow up in Osage County, as a place for research, to connect back with their community, with their culture, and to learn more. So it's geared for both demographics.
But it sounds like the museum is really geared towards outreach towards your community and filling gaps that may already be existing in the community.
I think that's true of all museums, but I think especially in small communities, it is a responsibility of our institutions to help our youth and adults. But I think it is our mission to do that type of outreach.
Now, is that a recent initiative or is that something the museum has been doing for a while?
So I have been the museum curator / director for 3 years. I started in June of 2015. And since that time, we have completely renovated our space, done a rebranding effort, a revitalization of sorts. And so while I know they did do a lot of programming before, I'm pushing us in kind of a new direction with the arts education. I know that they had a lot of authors and book readings and things of that nature, community photo days. So I don't think I'm reinventing the wheel. We're just kind of adding on.
But it sounds like it's more youth-oriented for the next generation.
Our future is our youth, and so when you can plant that seed of creativity and learning at a young age, they will grow up and bring their children and their grandchildren. And so it's like a snowball effect, and so that's what's important.
But it's also, in many ways, it's taking your community and tying them to the nation itself because you're at the headquarters, you're at the tribal seat of government.
Most definitely. We are on the Osage campus. Not only is our museum historic, but the whole area is historic. And when people come to visit us, we get to tell that story. And we get to use our narrative, not a non-Native view on our history, but to tell our story the way we want it to be told.
Yeah. So what's been the reaction from the tribal community at this change in focus? Is it something that feels like it's tying members more closely to the tribe?
I think change is always hard in any type of form. But what we've been doing we rotate our exhibits every 6 months. And we host outdoor movie nights and have these types of workshops. And so what we're beginning to see is a lot more return visitors. And our visitation numbers have tripled from when I first got here. So we're seeing a renewed interest in the museum and what the museum can do for the community. And we're also seeing a renewed interest in donations to our collection. And so that's great to see.
Yeah, I mean, I assume members have many pieces of memorabilia or important artifacts that may be better served by being at within the museum. What are some of those things?
So we really try to educate the public on what we do with an item that comes into our care. And we are a repository to take care of this for our future generations for forever. Some recent donations that we've received, our assistant chief, Raymond Redcorn, donated over 1,000 old images, real photo postcards, cabinet cards from the late 19th, early 20th centuries. We recently received a hand-drawn map of Osage County from 1900 that shows pasture lines. So these are the type of things that we strive to preserve for our future generations.
My guest today is Holly Winter. She's the curator-director of the Osage Nation Museum in Pawhuska. She recently won the 2018 Nancy Hanks Memorial Award for Professional Excellence from the American Alliance of Museums. It's a young professional award for those who've been in the field less than 10 years, but in her, fourth year, now in your fourth year, I guess, at the Osage Nation Museum, you've really tried to transform the museum. Can you give us a sense of how the museum has transformed over that 4 years as far as if somebody had gone to the museum 10 years ago, what would the experience be like today?
I think what we've really done is tried to put a renewed interest in exhibitions. We've started rotating our exhibits out every 6 months, and so our displays aren't static and they're ever changing, so there's a reason to come back in. We've also updated our facility to reinforce trust within the community. We've built a collection storage area, put in LED lighting, put in a fire suppression system, updated our security system.
So these are just sort of routine museum things that need to be done. But what about the visitor experience?
The visitor experience, we really try to have an interactive portion to each exhibit that we do have, whether if it's listening to an oral history or going on the Osage language app that anyone can download for free on their smartphone, do those types of things to really get visitors to interact. We have art cards throughout the galleries, artist benches. We have a children's corner where we have craft packs and an activity book that teaches them basic Osage words, lets them look at our collection in a child's point of view. So we really try to be all-inclusive, not only for children, but adults as well.
Yeah. Now, a lot of what you were talking about says you really increase the focus towards the next generation. Can you maybe talk about the enrichment you're doing as far as art workshops and the like and adding to the educational process for Osage children?
We want our children to realize that the Osage Nation Museum is a place for them to come and create and be creative and use their imagination. And so we really try to focus on areas that teach them art, but also teach them Osage history. And so last year we had an ornament workshop. It was an all-day pop-in event where we made photo cube ornaments, but they were all historic photos that they would decoupage onto this cube. We did different ornaments where they made figures out of popsicle sticks and felt, but they were taught how to kind of make the regalia.
Oh, okay, right. Mm-hmm.
So we try to use art as a way to teach history. And so we believe that's really important for our youth. Our nation has started an immersion school where they teach infants through grade 2, all in Osage. And so we are trying to revitalize our language to keep it alive, and that starts with our youth.
Let me ask you about the language immersion. How secure is the Osage language today, and what's the role of a museum in making sure that the language is preserved? Certain cultures, it's really in danger. I don't know what the situation with the Osage is. Is it in good shape?
We have a language department at the Osage Nation who has really strived to keep our language alive. It was almost a dying language. We almost lost all of our fluent speakers. And so over the last decade or two, we have really made strides in keeping our language at the forefront.
Would you say the language is on solid ground now, or is it still precarious?
I do believe that our language is on solid ground now. Uh-huh. We are working very hard to teach our youth the language. When you educate your young people and they grow up, then they can educate their young people. And so that I think is what we are striving to do. We've created a language app that you can download. We are working with Unicode to get it so that we can type with our orthography. So there's different things that we try to do to interject our language into our everyday.
And how important is that to a tribal museum like yours? I mean, I would think that's like sort of central to the mission in a way.
It is very important. And so we're really putting forth an effort to use our orthography on our object labels, to integrate language whenever we can into it. We're working on a digitization project where we are digitally recording all of our oral histories and all of our AV material so that it's there for future generations. I would say you would need your language to keep your sovereignty.
When you talk about putting like exhibit designs within the Osage script, is that something that readily exists today? I mean, I would think that like if you fire up your computer, I'm not sure the Osage orthography is going to be there necessarily, or is it?
We are making strides to get that so that it is available on everybody's computer. But there are ways that we can do it in the nation right now. We really work hand in hand with our other cultural departments to make sure that we are utilizing it in the best way possible.
Beyond language, what are some of the essential parts of a museum like yours that may differ from another cultural museum? What would you say those are?
I think we are very community-based, and we deal a lot with genealogy requests and looking into your history. And we are places where our community members can come and research and really
use our
collection.
So in many ways, it functions somewhat like a library in a way as well, as well as being... You have, you know, the art component, you have a history component, you have almost a library component as well.
And I think that's the great thing about tribal museums is they are community buildings. They are geared for their community. And again, I can't stress enough, being able to tell our own narrative is, I think, what is the most important.
Now, a lot of times tribal museums will... also tell a larger story to those that are not a part of the nation. Is that also a focus for you, or is that secondary to what you're actually providing for nation members?
So our mission is to educate the public, and I think that's all-encompassing, both our members and non-natives. And so we try to approach it as if someone came in and didn't know anything about the Osage Nation, we want them to leave knowing something, that we are a rich, multifaceted culture that is still thriving today, that has these traditional values, and that we are not a people of the past, but we are still here. And I think that's what's important.
My guest today is Hallie Winter. She's the curator director of the Osage Nation Museum in Pawhuska. She recently won the 2018 National Nancy Hanks Memorial Award for professional excellence from the American Alliance of Museums. She has, over the last 4 years, led an effort by the nation to really revitalize the Nation Museum. It's located in Pawhuska, Oklahoma, on the Osage campus, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, as you well know, Pawhuska has seen a boom with the Pioneer Woman store, restaurant. There's a whole building boom where you're resurrecting a lot of old buildings. Is the Nation Museum seeing a lot of tourism along with everything going along with the Pioneer Woman as well?
Most definitely. We are getting visitors that are coming in to Pawhuska specifically to see the Pioneer Woman. But we are also getting a lot of visitors that have read The Killers of the Flower Moon book by David Gran. And so I think our demographics are a little bit different between visitors for the Pioneer Woman and visitors that really want to know Osage history. But we are grateful for the increased traffic in Pawhuska. And as America's first tribal museum, it's really great to have people come in from all over the world and learn about the Osage. And so that's what's important to us.
Now, earlier in our conversation, you were saying, you know, we're not really focusing on that period of our history because it's still very painful to a lot of families in and around Pawhuska and Fairfax and various parts of the county. So when you have people coming in, I mean, what is the story you're trying to tell them as they learn more about it?
So they've read that story, right?
Yeah.
And so they don't know the other parts. And so that's what we try to tell. We want to focus on the good things. And so we try to teach them about our art forms and our current artists and our values as a people. And so I think what brings them here is that reign of terror, that horrible time period, what will make them come back is seeing what's going on today.
Yeah. Well, it's a wonderful honor for the museum and for you. I know there's a small stipend with it. What's been the reaction from the community to you winning this award, and what do you hope to accomplish with the museum in the next year or two?
I really appreciate the support of my people and of our nation, of our government, and I think we have seen increased interest in our museum as a whole. And I don't think it's just because I won this award, which is great, but because of what we're doing in the community. And my vision for the future is to expand eventually, make our facility larger, provide more areas for research, more areas for education. We are currently working on a new website. So there's a lot of different projects that we have going on. Our new exhibit will open in January, and it's focusing on Osage veterans and Native veterans in general and their role with the United States Armed Forces. And so what I really want people to take away is that we are not static, but we're ever-changing. There's a reason for a return visit, and you will always be pleased once you walk in the doors.
What about an idea of a goal of the museum sort of being one of the cultural homes for the tribe? It's be something where it's, you know, a lot of museums talk about being this sort of institution of creativity or institution, but in your case, it's almost an institution of heritage and of growth, I would think.
Most definitely. We have a great cultural department at the Osage Nation. We have a museum. We have a cultural center that teaches classes. We have a language department and a historic preservation office. And so collaboratively, we are really able to continue the Osage story, to promote the Osage story, and to teach the Osage story. And I think that's the most important thing for us, is to be able to teach our history.
All right. Well, for people who are popping up to Pawhuska or are nearby Pawhuska, when's the best time to visit the museum?
We are open Tuesday through Saturday from 8:30 to 5. We're located at 819 Grandview Avenue. It's up on the hill in Pawhuska.
All right. Well, Hallie, thanks so much for taking time to speak with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Hallie Winter is the curator and director of the Osage Nation Museum, which is located at 819 Grandview Avenue in Pawhuska, Oklahoma. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays. Their latest exhibit is titled Wedding Clothes and the Osage Community, A Giving Heritage, which is on display through December 1st. And they also have a workshop this Saturday on the preservation of family photographs. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Well, just as the Osage Nation Museum is focusing on the youth of its culture, commentator Mark Dara says we ought to be doing the same for the young people of Oklahoma as a whole.
In September 2016, the Recording Industry Association of America certified Garth Brooks' album, The Ultimate Hits, as a diamond record, the equivalent of 10 platinum albums representing sales of over 10 million copies. With this designation, Brooks became the recording artist with the most diamond records, 7, in history, exceeding even the Beatles. Of course, Oklahoman Brooks set the standard for country music for his generation, only if you leave out Oklahoman Reba McEntire, which you can't. In the same year Garth got his 7th diamond record, Chakota's own Carrie Underwood was named Country Music Association Entertainer of the Year, and anyone who grocery shopped couldn't avoid regularly seeing the mug of Tishomingo superstar Blake Shelton staring out from the check stand tabloids. The year before, at Radio City Music Hall in New York, Oklahomans and Oklahoma City University graduates Kristen Chenoweth and Kelly O'Hara led the competition for the Tony Award for the best performance by a leading actress in a musical. People who had seen the nominated shows of both of our native daughters thought either could justifiably win. O'Hara deservedly received the award, her first after 5 nominations. Of course, by this time, Chenoweth had already established her stature as a multi-time Tony recipient. In 2017, on the other coast, Ina Nady's Thad and Trent Luckenbills received recognition for helping to finance and produce the wonderful hit movie La La Land. In the heartland, but south of the Red River, Oklahoman Randall L. Stevenson completed his 10th year as CEO of AT&T and garnered uncomfortable attention as president of the Boy Scouts of America. The list goes on. Native Tulsan St. Vincent may be the most intriguing recording artist of her generation. Booker T. graduate Alan Heinberg writes incredibly well-liked comic books and wrote the screenplay for the popular 2017 film Wonder Woman. These big-name Oklahomans left our state to pursue their careers and chase their dreams, but thousands of others, not as well-known, leave for futures in all fields and never return. Our state leaders strive to bring new business to the state by promises of a hard, striving workforce, cheap labor, and a low cost of living, as many of our best, young, and talented flee the state. This exodus is the existential crisis facing Oklahoma, and not whether oil and gas companies should pay a few extra percentage points in gross production taxes, or whether a family of four should give up a small income tax break, which amounts to little more than a complete meal for the whole family at McDonald's. Our brilliant young don't want to be part of a cheap labor force and live where the cost of living is low. They want to live where careers blossom and dreams can come true. The loss of our young talent. This is our crisis. What are we going to do about it?
Mark Dara is a local attorney and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. He's also the author of the book of essays, A Catalog of Common People. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.